Welcome to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get notebook, paper, and a pen so you can take notes during the show. First, as we always do, we look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. From Bloomberg, personal bankruptcy filings in the U.S. rose 34% in January as the deepening economic crisis drove many to seek court protection from creditors. Individual bankruptcy filings climbed to 88,733, up more than a third from a year earlier and 4.5% higher than the 84,926 filings in December, according to a report by the National Bankruptcy Research Center. U.S. households are under great financial stress today, said Samuel Giordano, executive director of the American Bankruptcy Institute of Alexandria, Virginia, an industry group that distributed the report. For many, bankruptcy seems to be their best option. The group, which studies bankruptcy trends and educates practitioners, expects more than 1.4 million consumer bankruptcies to be filed in 2009. In 2008, there were 1.06 million such filings, up from 801,000 in 2007. U.S. consumer confidence dropped to the lowest level on record in January as layoffs accumulated and home values continued to decline. The Conference Board's Confidence Index fell to 37.7, the worst reading since monthly records began in 1967, the New York-based research group said January 27th. Separately, the U.S. Census Bureau said a record 19 million U.S. homes were empty at the end of 2008, and real estate data service Zillow.com reported the U.S. housing market lost $3.3 trillion in value last year. Millions of dollars in state aid, layoffs, extensive cost-cutting, and community support aren't always enough to ward off financial ills, several hospitals around the country are finding. The U.S. recession and state budget cuts have placed an added burden on hospitals already struggling with high numbers of uninsured patients, insufficient reimbursement rates, growing competition, and consistently thin profit margins. Just ask the people running the two hospitals in the Caritas Hospital System in Queens, New York, which, according to Crain's New York Business, faces a reckoning after several years of being kept afloat by $50 million in state aid. A bankruptcy filing may come as soon as this month, Crain said, after the recession dealt a final blow to a company that has long struggled with outdated facilities, high numbers of Medicaid patients, and little cash. Further north, Blue Hill Memorial Hospital in Maine last month laid off 15 employees and closed all open positions to cut $250,000 in monthly costs. According to the Bangor Daily News, hospital officials say the move is a major step that will bring the hospital back from the brink of bankruptcy, but are concerned about a proposal to cut state payments to hospitals, which could deprive Blue Hill $1 million in revenue when the hospital is already owed $3.5 million in back payments from the state. They already owe us, and now they want to cut $1 million in revenues, said Blue Hill Interim Administrator Eric Steele. I know these are very difficult issues for them, but we're trying to keep Blue Hill afloat. If they cut those funds, it would be like drop-kicking us when we're down. And from the Wall Street Journal, Congress strikes a $789 billion stimulus deal, a historic bill which would spur road building, give businesses tax breaks, expand broadband access, and the final passage is expected soon. Congress and the White House reached the accord on a $789.5 billion economic recovery package that would shower hundreds of billions of dollars in tax relief on individuals and businesses and spark an infrastructure building boom from the nation's ports and waterways to schools and military bases. The deal all but clinches passage of one of the largest economic rescue programs since Franklin Roosevelt launched the New Deal. President Barack Obama, speaking at a Northern Virginia construction site, hailed an endeavor of enormous scope and scale. The package dwarfs the military budget and exceeds the cost of the entire Iraq War since the invasion of 2003, defying two decades of mostly Republican-led efforts to diminish federal authority and focus on lifting the economy through tax cuts. The legislation would expand unemployment insurance, tilt federal assistance to the poor, launch major efforts to streamline health care delivery, and give Washington a larger hand in local education spending. The plan may be only a down payment on the Obama administration's effort to turn around an economy that has shed 3.6 million jobs since December 2006. Both Mr. Obama and Democratic leaders lowered their work creation expectation Wednesday. They had originally said their goal was to create or save 4 million jobs. They cut that to 3.5 million. The president has framed the deal as the first leg of an economic program aimed also at unclogging credit markets, lifting the housing market, and tightening regulation of the financial and banking sector. The agreement came late Wednesday after last-minute dickering over education and school construction funds that dramatized the intensity of negotiations. The House and Senate convened a conference committee to bless the legislation and clear the way for action in the House as early as this Thursday. Both chambers are expected to pass the compromise shortly. Full details weren't released last week as aides met late to draft formal language and said tinkering was still possible well into the night. About $282 billion of the bill, or 35%, is dedicated to tax cuts, split roughly evenly between incentives for businesses and individuals. The rest is spending, including expanded unemployment benefits, food stamps, and construction of highways and bridges, water treatment facilities, and high-speed internet service, among other things. The package includes a provision requiring materials purchased with funds from the bill to be U.S.-made. That has spurred criticism from trading partners around the world, but the measure was softened from the original versions and now includes a requirement that the provision be implemented consistently with U.S. international trade obligations, according to individuals familiar with the bill. Lawmakers were still negotiating late Wednesday on whether to impose strict limits on salaries and bonuses for companies taking taxpayer bailouts. The bill gives more aid for middle-class families and workers who lose their jobs, including fresh subsidies for health insurance. Businesses get a range of incentives for new investments. Small businesses with revenue under $5 million a year would be able to use current losses to reduce taxes paid over the past 5 years, a provision that cost about $2 billion. Large manufacturers have been covered in earlier versions that cost more than $19 billion, but were rebuffed in final trade-offs on the bill. The final deal included a $5.3 billion tax break that allows corporations to speed up deductions for investments in plants and equipment, and another allowing small businesses to deduct business expenditures of up to $250,000 directly from their tax liabilities. Certain middle-class households that currently aren't hit by the alternative minimum tax designed years ago to make sure the rich didn't escape taxation will remain shielded. The bill has $69 billion to ensure that for next year. But a separate tax break for the middle class and working poor is now less generous than the president wanted. Homebuyers who hoped for a $15,000 tax credit to buy a new home, as promised by the Senate, will be disappointed. A proposed $35 billion credit to support home sales was jettisoned in favor of a more modest $2 billion to $3 billion provision. The proposal would eliminate the repayment requirement in an existing tax credit for first-time homebuyers and raise the credit to $8,000 from $7,500. Congressional aides cautioned Wednesday that the credit size was still subject to negotiation. Consumers who had hoped for a big tax break for buying a new car will also be disappointed. An $11.5 billion break proposed by the Senate is now down to just $2 billion, with tighter limits on who qualifies. Among other things, the proposal would allow buyers a federal income tax deduction on local taxes on new car purchases. The stimulus plan is more tilted toward tax relief than Mr. Obama's original one. It's raising questions about whether all the compromising to trim costs and hold on to a fragile coalition in the Senate could undermine Mr. Obama's main goal, saving or creating millions of jobs over the next 2 years. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So let's move into the second portion of the show, where we will discuss the issues on how to deal with your debt, your personal situation, and make it better for you. As is always, we want to start with an important credit, because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs on the educational side are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors. And I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth, which is really the textbook for this show, and The Two Income Trap. And also, I highly advise that you look at the archives at www.kruufm.com and go into the Life and Debt section so you can catch up on all of the great educational points that these shows have been making over 42, 43 shows in the past. And you can really get a full blast picture of what to do to help yourself. I've been talking about the golden rules regarding relationships and money, so love and money, and the relationship really is a long-term relationship, a spouse, a partner, not just a live-in to share some common household kinds of things, but someone who is really an intimate person in your life for all levels of a relationship, from the physical to the spiritual, and it is something that is seen as going on for forever. So we've been looking at the golden rules and dealing with love and money. And last week, just to recap, we were at rule number 3, which is stop playing the blame game. And it comes up that you look at who is responsible for your money, you or your mate. And in many relationships, one person thinks the other person is responsible or they're responsible. But in fact, and in truth, and in perfect theory, it really is the both of you. And you may know this intuitively that you're both involved, yet it can be so easy and so satisfying, particularly when you get into some money problems. When the things are going wrong, of course, it's easy to blame your partner for all the money troubles. And that's not a good plan. So we took a self-test, and the name of the test is Are You Caught in the Blame Game? And like all these self-test, they're true or false statements. So I'll go over that again and just answer true or false. My partner spends too much money on things we don't need. My partner blames me for our money troubles. My partner should earn more money. Sometimes we spend money when we get angry with each other, maybe partly to get even. I feel like I need to justify how much I spend or how much I earn or don't earn to my partner. My partner thinks only about him or herself when spending money, not about my needs or wants. When I see the bills my partner ran up, I get really angry. And the last one is, deep down, I believe our money troubles are primarily my partner's fault. And then you look at your sheet there, and if you mark true for any of these statements, You and your mate have a problem with shifting responsibility and blaming each other for money problems. You have to really put it all on the table with your partner. There's a lot of little issues there. And yet, when you focus on those little issues, you see that your attention makes them build and they get really, really intensely out of control. And yet, when you actually start looking at both sides, there really is a list of quote-unquote sins in terms of debt accumulation and creation that goes on and on. And what do you need to do about that? Well, you should not be looking at the details. You should not be trying to create a case, a logic, to blame the other person. In fact, these are things that happened in the past, and you really need to let it go. In truth, you have to let the past be the past. And you really have to, like we do in exercise, you know, you put yourself under some stress and you've been there, you got to take a deep breath and let it go. So that's what you need to do. You really have to be, in a way, magnanimous, is the word Professor Warren uses. And it's not that you're at the level of a saint in that forgiveness is divine and so you can just step into that, which of course if you could do that, that's wonderful, but if you can't, it really is a bottom line of actually being selfish, because you need to get over it, seeing that it is the best for you. If you don't get over it, that is one of the things that creates lots of problems. So you're forgiving your mate because you really can't afford not to. The blame game is really the fastest road to the poorhouse. And this is a very realistic situation. An eye for an eye style spending will leave you, as Professor Warren says, not only blind, but broke. You need to get over it so you have a chance to get ahead financially. Forgiving your mate means taking 100% responsibility for your actions. That means that you decide to do what you know is right, and it really doesn't matter what your partner does at that level. No more giving yourself permission to do things you know aren't proper just because your mate has purportedly blown a bunch of money, or you find that there or found that there were things wrong on that list of sins that the other person did, and so now you're going to retaliate. This is not about vengeance. No more telling yourself to do something to kind of offset the bad thing that the other person did. You have to get straight what you can get straight and not be blaming anymore. And that's really regardless of whether or not your mate is willing or not to let go of the past, him or herself. There's nothing like your partner shaking the long finger of blame in your direction to send your intentions to stop blaming back or fighting back out the window. But instead of battling it out, try this. When something is pointed out that you did wrong, you say, "You're right, I made a mistake." And this will basically take the wind out of the sails that that person has to try to make this into a huge movement against you in your direction. And yet you really need to mean that you made the mistake. It has to be an honest confession, and it will be a very healing opportunity for you. And it really will undo the strength. It's almost like judo against what is coming at you. The blame game is about mistakes from the past. If the blame causes you to compound past mistakes by making more mistakes, which are really stupid mistakes, then you're letting yesterday's mistakes really destroy your future. You can't change yesterday, but you can decide what to do today to effectuate a better tomorrow. You can decide to let yesterday's mistakes get involved in today's decision, and then you will see you'll have problems. Or you can learn from the mistakes in the past, whatever lesson you needed to learn, and just move on. Blame can eat away at your happiness, but you don't want that. You want to have a better life, a happier life, a life that's a good life today, and the basis of that being a better life tomorrow. So no matter who earns the money, no matter who spends it, you are both 100% responsible. It's time to really let go of the blame game. Time to let go of the past. It's time to get on with the future you deserve financially. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. The other thing we did last week was look at golden rule number 4, which is to give each other some free money, which is really taking us back to the wants category, which should be ideally 30% of your formula income from your net disposable income. You should have 30% for wants, and each partner should get a stash of cash to spend on whatever he or she wants. And it's a little bit of a personal financial space where nothing gets reviewed by your partner. And you don't have to hide anything or deceive anything. It's free money and it's premised on honesty. Your main point is, as we discussed in the past, agreeing on what you can really afford for fun and how to divide it up. And this is not that you at this point necessarily have 30%. This would be an ideal setup when everything else is balanced, particularly your bare necessities and your savings with past debt. But there should always be something in the wants category, and you have sat down and honestly agreed to how it should be divvied up, and the amount would be fixed, and you decided together what is reasonable, and you trust each other to live within the bounds of what you agreed upon, and then that is an act of trust. And whatever you think you can afford isn't really the problem. It could be a very small amount of money, no matter how tight your budget. The issue is that you need to have that, and you need to make a little room for individual fund money. And once that is agreed on, that's free money, and you make it really and truly free. And there are no right purchases, no wrong purchases, and no one should be pointing out how the money could have been spent better. So you give this space and it makes you both happy. So the new rule for this week is rule 5, and that's keep money issues separate from the real stuff. Sometimes we have these discussions that wind up into arguments, and sometimes it's based on money, and we've been trying to deal with that, that money is the real problem, but sometimes it actually isn't the problem. It's a red herring, it's a diversion. And sometimes money is just a very familiar weapon that we use to fight over something which is entirely different. Now, this is not good. So, as is Professor Warren's habit, let's take another self-test. Is it really about money? Again, a true and false test. Sometimes my partner buys expensive things for me to make up after a fight. My partner sometimes uses money as an excuse for not doing something nice for me, like going out for the evening or buying me a birthday present. No matter how a disagreement starts, it always ends up as a fight about money. I think an expensive gift is a good way to say, I'm sorry. Money fights seem to come from nowhere. We're talking about something else and then suddenly we're yelling about money. Sometimes I spend money when I'm angry with my partner. Sometimes I say we can't afford something when the truth is I just don't want it. So answer true or false to all of those questions. And if there is a true statement out of any of these, then you and your mate have a problem with substituting money for the real issues in your relationship. And there are many, many things in a relationship that relate to emotions and honest emotions, and they can figure into the best of relationships. However, sometimes the problem isn't with the relationship, and sometimes it's with something completely different than the relationship. Stress outside of the relationship, at work, with another family member, worrying about something, or being hurt by somebody else, or something else. And there's no magic formula to make any of those emotions go away. and they're really bad feelings that you might have. However, substituting money for those real issues won't resolve any of the problem, and worse yet, they create new problems and just compound whatever else went wrong. You can't let conflict that may be there turn into battle over your finances. Trying to keep the word money out of your quarrels is a very important rule when it has nothing to do with money. Up to this point, remember, we've gone over so many formulas and issues and rules, and remember, you have made the decision in the rules that we've just recently gone over to get your money in balance, and you are getting on the road to a really brighter financial future. You have forgiven the past mistakes, which we just talked about, and you've decided to put an end to the blame game. You've agreed to give each other some free money so there is no quarrel over the little purchases. Therefore, at the end of all of that, there just shouldn't be very many money issues left to fight about. So with that in mind, you go ahead, you love, you live, and perhaps you even have to quarrel a little bit, but keep money out of the quarrel. If money is no longer the first weapon in your arsenal, and you discover that, you get a better understanding about what is really wrong, what's causing the problem, the emotional problem, and that means you get a better chance to make things right. So now let's go on to rule number six, golden rule number six, which is fight fair. And now we're putting ourselves in the situation where, in fact, money really is what is at issue, and you have to discuss it, and somehow it escalates into a fight. And the truth is, we do have different tastes, we do have different priorities. You may disagree with your mate's choices, and if you are a normal couple, you will argue about those differences at least once in a while. And you want to mitigate that, you want to do everything you can to reduce that. But let's have some ground rules, and I'll introduce those this week, and then we'll talk more about them next week. The ground rules for fighting fairly about money. So here are the rules. There's four basic rules. One is don't hit below the belt. Don't blame your partner for joint decisions. Don't make giant generalizations. And then the last rule, don't take every difference as a personal insult. So I'll just repeat those. Don't hit below the belt. Don't blame your partner for joint decisions. Don't make giant generalizations, and don't take every difference as a personal insult. So we'll expand on those next week and continue to work on the details of a simple approach to your finances, your debt, and in this section of the show, your debt and money in relationship to your mate. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life. You are listening to the open source sounds of Wicked All Stars. The song is Jazz House from the album Dark Clouds, available from Magnatune.